It's the Dearly Departed podcast, featuring your host, historian Scott Michaels, and filmmaker Mike Dorsey.
And just in time for Halloween, it's episode 13, lucky episode 13 of the Dearly Departed podcast. I'm Mike Dorsey.
I'm Scott Michaels.
And here we go. Yay. So much has happened in the past month. It really has. Much death. I have a whole page of death.
You know?
Just from the past 4 weeks.
Every cloud. Here we are. It's fuel for us.
Yes, exactly. And our show today is about the classic horror film Poltergeist.
Loads of stories with this one.
Yeah, amazing. Almost like a poltergeist curse, really.
Mm-hmm.
And since it's Halloween just about, it seems like a fitting subject to discuss.
There are terrors abound in that movie.
Yeah, there is. It's just literally scary movie. It's a legitimately scary movie. And maybe we'll tell a few of our own ghost stories along the way.
Mm.
So, did you get any hate mail?
Hate mail.
Oh, shit. I forgot to bring it.
Ugh.
Well, I did an interview with the guy that helped embalm Marilyn Monroe, and he tells the story about how he stole her falsies out of the garbage. I mean, I would have. Who wouldn't have? You know what I mean?
Who wouldn't?
Right, exactly. And inside, in between these falsies, because Marilyn wore falsies because there's a... his name's Alan Abbott. You can hear the interview. It's interesting.
Why did she wear...
Well, because she was, according to him, she was 36 and her breasts were starting to sag. And falsies, for those of you who might not know, it's kind of archaic. People don't use them anymore with plastic surgery, but they're foam breasts, usually for mastectomies. But anyway, Marilyn, some of them were small and discs, little discs, and hers had little nipple protrusions on them. So she could wear a sweater with a bra because she was 36 and her breasts were starting to sag, and she could put the falsie over it, so her sweater would look like a hat, like she wasn't wearing a bra.
A perky boob.
Right.
The
they brought it to the funeral home, and they didn't do anything because Marilyn was post-autopsy since her chest was then concave. So they took the falsies out, threw them out, and stuffed her bra with cotton. But also on the back of her head, since they had to seal up her head, you know, because there's a lot of slippage because she died face down. So they'd made an incision across the back of her head just to tighten everything up. And they had to cut the hair. So they threw the hair in the garbage. And Alan's wife was a big friend of Marilyn's, or fan, rather. Mm-hmm. So he took the falsies and the hair was right in the middle of it. So, but anyway,
I would have taken the hair. That's something I would have grabbed.
It's just natural, I think. You know, it's hero worship. And, it's always a lock of hair, you know, the Beatles and all that kind of business. Yeah. So anyway, I did the interview and there's loads of really just hateful emails because Marilyn is cherished by a lot of people and they think it's grave robbing. And there's an element of that, which is absolutely true. But to others like me who have a museum and I have lots of hair, and I have Patrick Swayze, I have Rosemarie, I have Zsa Zsa Gabor, I have Tiny Tim. So, you know, to me, it's history. So anyway, but that was all the hate mail I got was from that. So you can just read the comments on that interview. It's pretty, you know.
Anytime you touch on an iconic person, you're going to get the super fans.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Michael Jackson, James Dean, Marilyn Monroe, they're kind of all in that club.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. News of the, not week, but news of the month.
News of the death.
Which we call news of the week.
News of the week.
Man, we had a lot of deaths. First and foremost probably would be the death of comic Rip Taylor.
Aww.
The flamboyant comic who threw glitter.
He was a bizarre guy. He used to hang out at the Spoon on Santa Monica Boulevard. We saw him there quite a bit without his hairpiece. And one time I was at a charity event I was with my friend Donna Lethal, and it was a Carol Channing charity event for pet causes. And it was crazy. I mean, Lily Tomlin was there, and Loretta Swit, and Jamie Farr, and all these really interesting people. And Rip was there. He got in late, and we were in the lobby. We go, Rip, how's it going? And he goes, medium. So that's become like the tag, sort of. How are you today? Medium.
Medium. So-so. It's, you know, what's interesting to me is he was, you know, flamboyantly gay. That was basically his act.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that, you know, that's an era back then when that's being gay in general was still not accepted by society. And yet, if you were kind of silly and funny.
Campy, effeminate.
It was kind of like, oh, well, that's okay.
Yeah, you could be mocked and be cool. Like Paul Lynde, like Charles Nelson Reilly. Yeah, they were unthreatening to anyone's masculinity or anything like that. And embraced. I mean, look at it. He was showing up in the Jackass movie.
Right.
So, you know, that's I love that. A generation later recognized him.
So he died October 6th at the age of 84 at Cedars. Complications of epileptic seizure.
84.
Yep. Speaking of the Silver Spoon restaurant, which you just talked about, Robert Forster.
Right.
Died at 78 on October 11th. Just a veteran actor. He was in Jackie Brown. He was in Breaking Bad. He was in Mulholland Drive.
Another
Twin Peaks reboot.
Yeah.
He was in the new Breaking Bad movie. Pretty much stole the movie, El Camino, that just came out on Netflix. And he was a regular at Silver Spoon also.
Yeah. I think that's where Tarantino signed him, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a story that Robert Forster tells at the Silver Spoon, where he talks about being there and Tarantino finding him there, basically, and giving him a script for, I think it was a script for Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
And Forster had auditioned to be in, I think, Reservoir Dogs 5 years earlier and hadn't gotten it. But Tarantino never forgot him and came back.
The whole Silver Spoon crowd came from Googies, which used to be next to Schwab's on Sunset. And all those people, James Dean, Eartha Kitt, they say Lana Turner was discovered there, but that's not true. But Martin Landau, Robert Forster, Shelley Winters, they all hung out at Schwab's. And then when Schwab's got torn down, they went to Theodore's, which ultimately became the Silver Spoon.
Okay, and the Silver Spoon was on Santa Monica Boulevard, kind of West Hollywood adjacent or near West Hollywood. Yeah.
And now it's a seafood, very popular. You know,
nice seafood place, but it's not a divey.
Oh, my God.
I can't
tell you. That was my drinking hole for years, man. That was.
I met you there one time.
Did we?
Yeah.
And I mean, I love that place. It was Alcoholics Obvious, you know what I mean? I know so many people that died from liver failure that used to hang out there.
It was one of those places that was a celebrity haunt that wasn't known outside of
and
LA.
In fairness, Forster was not a drinker. He was not in the bar, neither was Shelley
Winters.
He was
in a restaurant area.
Yeah.
So rest in peace, Robert Forster. Ginger Baker, the Cream drummer and co-founder and a highly influential drummer in rock history, died on October 6th. Also, same as Rip Taylor, at the age of 80 from heart disease, and he had apparently been in the hospital for a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not a good month for drummers, because also Kenny Dixon, the drummer for the country star Kane Brown, died at the age of 27 from a car accident I think a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, man.
I'm not familiar.
No,
the band, a lot of people. I mean, it got a lot of news when he passed away. Diane Carroll, actress, pioneering actress from Dynasty and Julia, Oscar-nominated, Tony-winning, died at the age of 84 from cancer on October 5th. And you had something about...
Well, Diahanana, which is what we always refer to her. Diahanana. No, she lived really close to the Silver... not the Silver Spoon, the old Hamburger Hamlet.
Oh, okay.
And she lived, I think, in the same building as our friend... I don't want to say her name just because I don't want to divulge where people we know live. But anyway, she was a regular at the Hamburger Hamlet, and the hostess, who was a former Mrs. Miles Davis, they were good friends. But she was married for about 10 years to Vic Damone. And Vic Damone is the guy who married...
If you're listening to this, that's a siren on here. Don't look around your car. That's not...
Oh, that would scare the hell out of me. Yeah, I hate when that happens in songs.
Yeah, that happened here live or recorded, I guess, for you guys.
So, but she was married to Vic Damone. Vic Damone was the guy who married Pierangeli, and Pierangeli was James Dean's love. And according to legend, they were at their wedding. Jimmy was parked across the street gunning the engine of his motorcycle and took off when they came out of the church.
Huh.
So yeah, they often say that Pierangeli was the love of Jimmy's life, but he only lived for 24 years. So,
Jerry Fogle of the Mothers-in-Law. Died at 83 on October 21st from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
That show was funny.
Yeah.
Mothers-in-Law,
that was a 60s sitcom.
It only ran
for
2 years. Desi Arnaz produced it and directed a lot of them. And it was one of those female-led shows, which, as a young gay man, that's what we loved. You know, That Girl and Bewitched and I Dream of Jeannie was all these, you know, major female characters, and the men were always in the back. And
yeah.
But they were just snippy women, and they were housewives, and married to the gayest of gay men, Roger Carmel, and I forget the other guys' names, but they couldn't be more homosexual. And I don't know. It was just one of those shows. But they were very fun. Kay Ballard and Eve Arden. Eve Arden was sort of like the American Maggie Smith. She played the principal in Grease, as almost people know her. And Kay Ballard was more of a stage actress, but very funny lady.
And Bill Macy of Maude died at 97 on October 17th from being 97.
Yeah,
97. As cause of death being 97. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That Maude was a great show, and he—I mean, it would be difficult to share the screen with B. Arthur. So he was more or less, you know, in the background sipping cocktails and sitting at the bar while she was being Maude.
This is a big story, scandalous story that happened a couple weeks ago. Tarzan actor, the TV Tarzan, right?
Yeah,
television 70s, Tarzan yeah. actor, Ron Ely. His wife was murdered by their son, stabbed to death at their home in Santa Barbara. And then when police showed up, they shot the son and killed him. So a double tragedy. In his family on October 8th. And his wife was Valerie Lundeen Ely, who she was 62, and she was a former Miss Florida.
And they were married from the 70s. I mean, they weren't, it wasn't like she was, you know, towards the end, and he might be considered, you know, suspicious
they were together
motivations.
Along. I mean, yeah, I mean, their kids are in their 20s and 30s.
And it was
yeah.
her kid, too, I think.
I believe so.
And, yeah, that's, that is,
so
that's
I don't know
nuts.
What the story, if there was mental illness or what the deal was, but.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was clearly having a bad day.
I think if you stab your mother a bunch of times and then get shot by the police, you probably weren't.
And there was
completely
a,
straight in your mind.
I don't know. For some reason, they said that the son was trying to make it look like it was his father that did it.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how that was the case, how that could be if he had the gun in his hand while
the
police
knife.
Were.
Yeah.
We should probably look that up more than before we start talking about it.
Well, I mean, he probably didn't plan it out that well if he was still holding the knife at the scene when the cops got there. Yeah.
I wonder why that even. It might be there's a note or something like that, fingerprints or something. I don't know.
Scotty Bowers, big name,
right. Yeah.
A big name. The male madam to the stars. He was 96, died of natural causes, died at his home in Laurel Canyon. He had a 2017 documentary called Scotty and the Secret History of Hollywood. Mm. And basically he claimed that he was, you know, kind of like a, he would hook male stars, gay male stars up with... hookups.
Yeah,
he would hook. He wasn't. He didn't call himself a pimp.
No, he worked at
he
a
said
gas
he didn't,
station.
He said he didn't get paid for it, but he got paid. He sort of did get paid for it, but not directly paid for it.
No,
but
he liked doing
it. He had a gas station in Hollywood, and he set up a trailer in back,
with two
beds.
And what
that
was good
where
about,
he would meet up with
what
people.
What was good about his book is that the people that he talked about. There were no revelations in the book. The
There's
people,
a lot of people
that he
you
named,
always suspected or knew
you know,
were.
It was always, you know, Catherine Hepburn, it was Spencer Tracy, it was Charles Lawton.
Cary Grant.
These were all established as.
Cary Grant, right? Was one of those.
I don't remember
I
that,
remember,
but probably.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah.
But yeah, and it mentioned swingers, and it was just, you know, it was a very dishy book.
Yeah.
But no real revelations about who was gay or not. But yeah, it was right in the corner of where that fire station is on Van Ness and Hollywood Boulevard.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, he was just the thing about Charles Lawton. You gotta, man, that was nuts. I can't, you know, because he was. We know he was gay. Elsa Lanchester walked in on him, and he was with a young guy on a sofa, and she threw the sofa out the window of the house, and never talked about it again. But they stayed married. The story about him, I'll just say. There's
watch the movie.
Well,
or
yeah,
read
there's,
the book,
there's something
was
about
there a book.
Yeah, that's
there's
how
a book
I didn't
too, right?
see the
yeah.
movie. I read the book.
And of course, you know, a lot of his stories are uncorroborated, so you just have to take his word on it. But there's kind of no reason to disbelieve him.
Right.
He wasn't someone who seemed to be looking for fame or fortune. He just toward the end of his life, he decided to open up about all this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Charles Lawton, I'll just say the stuff that he spread on bread was something else. That's all I can say.
Karen Pendleton, who was an original Mouseketeer, and she was one of only 9 original ones who stayed around for the whole run of the show. She was 73, died on October 6th from a heart attack. And it has been a bad year for freaking Mouseketeers, man, because we've been talking about Dennis Day on our earlier episodes where he likely was murdered under some very weird circumstances. So not a good year for Mouseketeers.
No. It was Annette Funicello's birthday the other day.
Happy birthday. Larry Junstrom, who was the bassist for 38 Special and Lynyrd Skynyrd, died also on October 6th at the age of 70. Unknown causes. Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Did you ever see Jerry Lewis butcher that name on one of the telethons?
No. What did he do?
He was like Lynyrd Skynyrd.
They didn't give him a phonetic spelling, and he's just like, I have no idea what the prompter says right now. Linda Porter, actress on Superstore and Twin Peaks and Two Broke Girls and The Mindy Project and How I Met Your Mother, and I'm sure what was a highlight for her, Dude, Where's My Car? And many, many, many others died at the age of 86 on September 25th from cancer.
Cancer.
This is a big one for my generation, man. Tommy from Karate Kid, also real name Robert Garrison, died on September 27th at the age of 59. His famous line in that movie being, get him a body bag, yeah, during the big finale fight scene.
Was he a good guy or a bad guy?
He was a bad guy. He was saying it about our hero, Daniel LaRusso. It was during the big tournament at the end.
The blonde guy?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember
him. Not the main villain.
Okay.
Guy. He was like one of the villain's sidekicks.
I see.
Yeah. So, but he had recently appeared on the new Karate Kid show that they have on YouTube.
There's a new one?
Yeah, they brought all the characters back. And it's like them as adults.
Great.
It supposedly is really good. I tried watching it. I couldn't get into
Except
it.
Except without
I
Pat know Morita, which it was the show, really, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and Pat Morita really was it. No Mr. Miyagi, but I don't know. Whatever. Jimmy Nelson, the ventriloquist of the 50s, who was famous for doing Nestle commercials. He had two characters named Farfel and Danny O'Day.
You know, Danny O'Day is responsible for one of the many things that are responsible for there's a term called kinder trauma, which are things that you saw when you were a kid and it freaked you out. But in the 60s, there were two ventriloquist dummies that they would sell in the stores that were huge. It was Charlie McCarthy and Danny O'Day. I don't know why Danny O'Day, because there were other ones like Mortimer Snerd and a lot of other ones but those are the two that they flew off the shelves, and they always ended up in somebody's basement on a shelf, you know, making eye contact with everyone that goes down the stairs. We have neighbors that have one of those.
Speaking of scary dolls, we'll be talking more about that later on in the show.
Yeah. No more kinder trauma.
Poltergeist, yeah. Sig Haig. Man, that's a very awkward name. Horror icon from House of 1,000 Corpses and a bunch of other movies. He was a big cult following.
Captain Spaulding, eh?
He was 80, died on September 21st following an unspecified accident 2 weeks earlier, so probably like a fall or something. He was also in a couple of Quentin Tarantino movies, Jackie Brown Again and Kill Bill Volume 2. So, and also, Danny O'Day, we just talked about, died at the age of 90 on September 24th. You're right. Not the doll. The doll lives forever.
Yes.
Jimmy Nelson, who created the doll, died on September 24th at the age of 90 from a stroke. And then finally, last on our list, Larry Wallace, who was the original Motorhead guitarist, died at the age of 70 on September 19th. No cause of death.
Lots of the music's gone this month.
So, yeah, and I mean, and four of these people died on October 6th. October 6th was a big day. Rip Taylor, Ginger Baker, Karen Pendleton, and Larry Junstrom all died on the 6th. That's it.
R.I.P.
So, there's a couple other news items here. So you just did this thing at the Valley Relics Museum. What is that, and what were you doing?
My friend Bridget Marquardt, who was one of the Playboy models from The Girls Next Door, we've maintained a friendship since I did an episode of that show.
Right.
And she's really into the paranormal, and she has her own podcast called Bridget's Ghost Magnet.
Mm-hmm.
And she was doing a live panel discussion with people that were prominent in the death and ghostly world. So there were psychics and investigators, et cetera, in the panel discussion. It was a lot of fun. We had a good time, and I got to meet some new people, and I was glad to have done it. And I got $25. So put that in your smoke, in your pipe, and smoke it, rolling in it.
Where are you going to spend it all, Scott?
At the museum. If you get a chance, the Valley Relics Museum is really
where
cool.
Where is it?
It's in like Reseda or something. It's kind of far away, but it's near Van Nuys Airport, and they have the old neon signs from so many places, Ben Frank's and the old Tiffany Theater on Sunset, and they have tons of really cool things. They have they have some of Sharon Tate's stuff in there too. It's just really an odd bunch of things. They have my favorite thing in there is Eve Plum from the Brady Bunch. Mm. Is her bedroom door from when she was a kid, like in real life, and it's got all these really cool stickers on it. It's really
That's boys keep out.
Yeah. So Tommy, who owns that, is a good buddy, and I highly recommend that. They have Nudie, you know, the designer, the country. He's the guy that designed all the, you know, the crazy Hank Williams,
right.
You know, the sequins and and Patsy Cline, etc. And he has Nudie's car, and all the handles are like guns, and the hood ornament's a huge gun. It's really, and it's got horns on the front of it. I love that shit.
And you had a Rocky Horror thing.
Yeah. I wrote a book about Rocky Horror 20 years ago, and it was nice to be able to share some of the stories of when I wrote the book to some people that came to the shop. It was a lot of fun, and the stories, much like us doing this, you know, it's cool. I love doing this because we both have like odd nuggets that would die with us if they didn't get shared like this.
Right.
So I do love being able to tell stories and not write them down because I'm too lazy, but also that you know, be able to share them in our own voice. I love that. They're not dead. Like the stupid prank phone calls and you know, it doesn't really matter to anybody, but they're cute, funny stories, and it's nice to be able to share them with people so they don't die with me.
And then you and I did a Coast to Coast AM interview at midnight a few weeks ago.
I don't stay up that late. Oh, that was rough. That
we
was
did
really
two
rough.
Hours on that show,
oh my
man.
God.
It was great. We did midnight to 2 a.m.
So at George Norrie, I mean, that was fun. They were really nice guys, very respectable people.
Yeah, I thought he was a good interviewer
myself.
I wish that we could have been Art Bell, just because that guy's a classic, but he passed away a couple years ago, so no Art Bell. But it was still really, really cool.
You know, I signed up to their mailing list on Coast to Coast, and
you know, I keep up on like the Sasquatch and UFO stuff.
Did you listen to that recording?
No.
Oh my God!
Oh, which one? The one the Sasquatch in the forest?
Yes.
Yeah.
That scared the shit out of me.
It's a good growl.
Yeah, these people were out hiking and they had their video camera on.
It was in Canada or something. Right?
Yeah, and they just this thing. I mean, I don't even want to know if you think it's fake. I don't want to hear it.
Okay, I won't. Then I won't say anything.
I mean, honestly, they screen stuff. I mean, Coast to Coast is a legit. They have millions of followers, so they don't just put stuff out there. So it was scary, that screaming, that wolf. You know, oh man, it was scary. Yeah,
I remember listening to Coast to Coast like driving across the desert as a kid in the 80s. And Art Bell, you know, it was late night radio.
Yeah.
It'd be the only thing on it, you know, on AM radio out in the middle of nowhere. So it was always fun to listen to the stories.
Yeah,
and
I mean, I'm
surprised
odd people,
the odd people would call in the theories and all that stuff. Yeah,
yeah. No, but I'm not saying it was absolutely, but they wouldn't have shared it if there was some sort of legitimacy to it.
Mm-hmm. And then you went to the James Dean crash site again recently.
We did, with
a van load of people
for the interview for the anniversary.
Yeah,
and. Yeah, we had our 14 people, only one puker, and
make them ride in the front seat.
Yeah, well, that would have been better. But anyway, yeah, it was good. We always really enjoy it. It's just nice to hang out with a dozen people or so that are Jimmy fans, and I don't know. Deaners are nice people.
And you went out to that lovely memorial sculpture
that you love
so much.
My friend Patrick, who's a huge Deaner, I mean, he goes to Fairmont all the time.
They do that for the annual festival that they do, yeah.
They do Jimmy's birthday, and there's this old road that Jimmy was actually on. You know, we filmed there, and Patrick or shot video there. And Patrick went there 3 weeks earlier with one of those weed whippers. And he spent two full days with a weed whipper cleaning off that road for us to go over there. I mean, Patrick's a terrific guy. And anyway, it was. I mean, there's real love and devotion in this.
Yeah.
And that was really, it was cool. It was really cool.
All right. So shall we get into the main feature?
It's here.
I know. It's here.
That was pretty bad.
All right, let's dig in.
It's time for the main feature.
All right, it's time. Poltergeist. The Steven Spielberg written classic horror film, which Spielberg was actually supposed to direct, but he had a contract issue with the other film he was working on, so he couldn't. So they brought in
Toby Hooper. Is it Toby?
I think it's Toby.
That one.
Shit.
Hold on. Okay. Well, I mean, I'm like sure we're not the only ones that go through this.
Toby. It's Toby, you dumbass.
Well, we know who we're talking
French.
About.
We don't ever I say Toby.
Say, we don't have to say the
or
name
is it
again.
Tobe.
That guy.
Toby. I mean, we should know. He was a prolific director.
Yeah.
He did a lot of horror films,
yes,
and that's why he was brought in. Because he was a great horror director.
But apparently didn't get on with Spielberg very well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now Spielberg took over and filmed a good portion of it.
And
there was
that.
A lawsuit because it was changed. The credits were changed by a Steven Spielberg film. And he, Hooper, had sued. And they say he got like $15,000 for it. But there was some real... tension. And then Spielberg took out a full page ad in Variety thanking him for their unique partnership or something like that.
I wonder if that was part of the settlement.
Yeah.
Issue a public because he was concerned about his career maybe going forward. Yeah.
But he had, Spielberg did direct a good portion of that movie.
I mean, he must have felt like he directed enough of it to make it a Spielberg film.
Yeah.
Right.
And there were so many Spielberg touches to that movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Star Wars thing, well, that was more of a George Lucas thing, but there was a lot of Star Wars.
Yeah, you see Yoda in the background in one of the early shots in the kid's room, and there's another Star Wars. There's a Wookiee.
He has a sheet that he pulls. Remember Chewbacca?
There's
the
Wookiee,
jacket over the clown.
There's the Chewie thing, yeah.
Yeah,
that's right.
Darth Vader poster on the wall and the Star Wars
sheets. It's like when his probably the most famous reference he ever made to it was in E.T. when they go trick-or-treating. And the kid and E.T.'s, you know, dressed up as a ghost. He's got the sheet over him. And there's a kid that walks by dressed as Yoda. And E.T. suddenly acts like he recognizes him and starts to go after him.
I've seen that movie in decades.
And I heard the story that Spielberg first screened the movie with George Lucas sitting next to him.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happened, George kind of nudged him and was like, thanks, man, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's kind of a cool. So it's not the first and only time that Spielberg has put Star Wars references into his movies from that era.
That was a huge, and because that came out like 5 years after Star Wars came out, so
yeah,
it was still
that's right.
It was still riding the wave.
But also, Star Wars was so huge; it's almost like if you're going to portray kids in that era, there's going to be Star Wars stuff around, just as much as there's going to be G.I. Joe stuff and other, you know, He-Man and stuff like that around.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, Star Wars was that was my thing for a long
Everybody
time.
Everybody had Star Wars toys, dude.
Yeah. It was a good show. It was a good movie. I mean, it stood alone.
Yes.
Which I loved because that second movie, I was so pissed off about it. And people say that's the best one.
The cliffhanger one.
Yeah. And they're just like, they're just staring out a window at the end going,
You
know, I was so pissed. And What's-His-Face is still frozen. I was pissed. That's why it's such a scam. I mean, it's like those Lord of the Rings movie. I saw the first one. I was
them
like,
all up.
Fuck this. I was so over it. No way, but I see the others.
The instance of that I was most mad at was when, I think it was the Weinsteins made Tarantino split up the Kill Bill movie into two movies. And that sucks because I think if that movie had stayed together as one, it would have, I think it'd be more of a classic than it even is, as is.
To be continued.
Yeah.
Stop it. Stop it. What was that other
Come
movie
back
that
in
Spielberg
2 years and
did?
Give us more money if you want to see what happens next.
That kid with who was that one where the kid was a robot and at the end
AI
and it's like it's a 16 years later or something like that in the movie. I was like, it was laughable. It really was scary because he was still under there, but it was like
6,000 years later or a million years later or something like that.
It was just something that was that was disturbing, but the whole thing was disturbing. But anyway.
I mean, robot gigolos and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Sex robots.
Well, that's. I knew a guy that used to make spines for those real dolls. He was into.
What?
I know, right? He was a welder, and he made spines for real dolls.
That's amazing. That. Should have that guy make some for some politicians out there right now. All right, what's up? What's up first?
Well, you know, people do say that there is a curse to the movie, and I that's a they said Rebel Without a Cause was a curse.
Yeah.
The Exorcist was cursed.
Sure.
Rosemary's Baby. They say mm-hmm. that the Manson Murders, we had to plug that, of course. We got to say something about it. Was a offshoot of the Rosemary's Baby curse.
Mm-hmm.
And The Crow, you know, with Brandon Lee,
right.
which is also a Benedict Canyon thing, because he lived on Benedict when he died, although he died in North Carolina. But somebody was stabbed with a screwdriver on the set, and somebody, a stunt person, fell through a roof on the set
on
of
Poltergeist?
The Crow. No, of The Crow.
Oh, okay. And then, of course, Brandon Lee was shot on accident.
Yeah. So there are several films that they claim to have curses. And Poltergeist, you know, it took a long time, much like Rebel Without a Cause, you know, over a 50-year span. Well, 30, really. But
it was a lazy curse.
Yeah, it really was. And this one is the same. It took three movies for the curse to follow through.
Yeah.
But, so it really a bit.
But one of them was almost immediate and probably the most tragic.
Dominique, that was within months.
Yep.
Yeah, Dominique Dunn.
She played the older sister in the family.
She was. And, you know, I watched it last night. There was all kinds of, you know, hashtag Me Too moments in that. They were so lecherous. Those guys that were working construction at the house.
Uh-huh.
You know, and this girl's 16, and they're like, hubba hubba, you know. I mean, she stood well on her own, and her mother's kind of looking through the window and giggling because she watches her daughter flipping these construction workers off. But, you know, that was surprising.
Yeah.
With the climate nowadays, it's just interesting to see how times have changed.
So what happened to her in real life?
Dominique, you know, Dominique Dunn was, you know, the daughter of Dominic Dunn, who turned into a crime writer because of this. He was a producer and fell in hard times. And of course, when his daughter was murdered, fell in even harder times. And her brother is Griffin Dunn, who is also an actor.
Yep.
She is the niece to a writer named Gregory Dunn and his wife, Joan Didion, who was a huge, you know, author in the 60s. So so she came from a long line of show business people.
Right,
or
and was, I think, well off growing up and all that, yeah.
In Beverly Hills Home.
Apparently she moved away for a while, and then when she came back as an adult or as an older teenager, she got her first gig within, like, a few weeks of, you know, getting off the bus in Hollywood, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably didn't help. All the connections that she had didn't hurt.
She went to Beverly Hills. I think it was Beverly Hills High School.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I know that she was schoolmates with Carrie Fisher.
Oh, wow.
And Carrie Fisher told me that she and George Clooney went to the funeral at Good Shepherd. It was funny because she was like, I went to that funeral, and I started talking about Dominique Dunn. It was like, okay, that was interesting. Everyone's really into this. No one wants to, if you question them, they get weird and defensive. But they're all like, I went to that funeral, you know. It's like, okay,
right.
Yeah. So it's sort of, but anyway, Dominique was seeing a guy named Sweeney, John Thomas Sweeney, and well-documented abuser, you know. He abused his girlfriends, and there were all kinds of red flags with her. There's documents or letters that she wrote to him saying, leave me alone, I'm afraid for my life around you.
She famously showed up on set for one of her for a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what it was around this time, and she had bruises on her face, and she was supposed to play a battered victim on the show, and they said that in the show, that's not makeup. Actually showed up looking. Yeah, basically. Yeah. She showed up with those actual wounds on her face are what you see in the show.
Yeah, insanely jealous. And during the trial, well, anyway, it was October 30th, 82, so Poltergeist had only been out for a few months.
Mm-hmm.
And she was seeing this Sweeney guy who, you know, was a monster and is still, wherever he is, he still deserves to be called a monster.
Yeah.
And she tried to end it with him, but then she got back together with him.
Mm-hmm.
But then she tried ending it with him. And she lived on Rangeley right off of Robertson in a little bungalow. It's for sale right now. And she was rehearsing in her house with a guy named David Packer, who was they were doing lines for, she was working on a show called V. And Sweeney knocked on her door, and she told Packer to sit tight.
Mm-hmm.
And she went out, and she was going to try to talk to him. She was trying to end it with him at that point, and he was not having it. So Packer actually heard some commotion outside. And there's some kind of odd business with him and a 911 call and waiting to call.
Yeah.
So he looked outside and saw him kneeling in the driveway over Dominique's body. And I don't know if he said that to the police officer or he said it to Packer, but Sweeney said, I killed my girlfriend.
Oh.
And they, but
he
but
strangled her
for between 4 and 6 minutes. He strangled her. He had his knee on her chest.
Like he wanted her to die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I just got chills talking about it. What a monster.
Yeah.
What a monster. So,
and how horrible would you feel for the rest of your life if you're that guy inside and you didn't come out
Packer,
and check?
Yeah. And I understand
that while you're sitting in there, this girl's being murdered.
Yeah.
If you had just walked outside and looked.
Yeah. And Jo Beth Williams made some kind of really nasty, not nasty, but she was a hypercritical remark about him. How could he?
He might have just been like, give her privacy. She's having a conversation with her
boyfriend.
And Sweeney's
probably a monster, you know? Yeah. Nobody really knew the extent. There were red flags for her family and her close, probably people around her, but Packer probably didn't have any idea.
Mm-hmm.
And but I had some friends of his on my tour probably 10 years ago and said that, yeah, that's something that really messed him up for years, that he didn't act, I guess, the way a lot of people thought he should have. But if Maura, or now his name is Maura, Sweeney was a monster, and he figured Dominique's used to it. She'll deal with it in her own way.
Mm-hmm.
But 4 to 6 minutes. And then she was taken to Cedars, and she was on life support for like...
5 days, I think. Yeah,
and she died. That was Halloween. Well, it was October 30th, the day before Halloween, which is appropriate to what we're talking about right now.
And I read that on IMDb, so I mean, grain of salt, who knows who posted this, but Cedars has been adamant in denying that they unplugged her.
Yes, I've heard that.
Kind of thought that she was taken off life support, but they claimed that no, she wasn't.
She was brain dead
because
of the strangulation.
Yep.
And her organs were harvested. That's always a term that really kind of always makes me shudder. He said, I mean, Dominic Dunn said that they had to cut off her hair to her roots. And he says all you could see were these purple hand marks around her neck.
Jeez.
While she was laying there dying in her hospital bed. And Dominic said, this is really interesting, and I don't know. I don't know where I read this. I think it might have even been Dominic Dunn that said this himself. But when he said goodbye to her for the last time, he said he kissed her head and whispered to her, "Give me your talent."
Hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. So and he did spiral into an alcoholic frenzy and stayed in a cabin in some woods somewhere. And the family were actually going to try. They discussed. He talks about this openly. They discussed putting a hit out on the guy.
Yeah. I would be hard pressed not to.
Yeah. Dominique's mother, Lenny, who had MS. I mean, her and Dominic split up, but they still lived together. And I think they were still devoted to each other. But at that point was in a wheelchair, and she wasn't supposed to go to the trial, but she went all the time. But Lenny started the Justice for Homicide Victims charity because of that.
And also because of the sentencing, which was the biggest atrocity in probably this whole, second to only to the murder itself. He got 4 years for that.
He was convicted for six, but
he only did like 2.5.
Yeah. Involuntary manslaughter. Heat of the moment, they made it. And at the beginning of the trial, the judge was like, this is clear-cut case of murder.
Right.
And then towards the end of it, but Dominic really railed on the judge. He said he was a showboater and a grandstander, and he was really enjoying the TV cover. He said he would wear designer clothes after a while when he saw the attention. And 2.5 years.
Like Judge Ito.
Yeah. So he was released after 2.5 years for strangling Dominique Dunn for 4 to 6 minutes. And he was a chef. He used to work at the Mommy's Own restaurant, which was an Orson Welles hangout, who supposedly haunts that place, by the way. We're talking about ghosts.
Uh-huh.
And he resumed his career as a chef. And his mother, Lenny, or Dominique's mother, Lenny, started this group of Justice for Homicide Victims. And they would they created pamphlets, and they hung out in front of the restaurant. And the pamphlet said, "The hands that will prepare your meal tonight also strangled Dominique Dunn."
Right.
So
he was gone.
Yeah,
Pacific
Northwest. John Maura is his name.
Everybody flee to the Pacific Northwest when they don't want to be found. What is
John Maura?
That's his real name now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So fuck that guy.
Yeah.
Wherever he is.
Monster.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. Sorry. Rest in peace, Dominique. God, what a shithead.
Yeah. The murderer, not Dominique.
Right.
All right. Who's next on the list?
Well, The next one was the guy, the God, that scary actor.
So we're going in chronological order.
Or trying to. Probably not, but...
Ish.
But the Julian Beck, the guy that played Kane in the second movie.
Oh, okay.
Oh, my God.
I haven't seen the sequels, I don't think.
Oh, my God. That is one of the scariest guys ever. He plays this, this preacher. And, oh, my God, you got to see that. It is so scary. And they said it was the scariest non-special effect moment in that movie. Because that guy, he was only 60 when he died. He died in 1985. Julian Beck was his real name. And he had already been diagnosed with stomach cancer before the shoot. So he was literally dying during the shoot. And he played the skeleton-esque character. It was scary. It was really, really scary. And he was the... But anyway, yeah, he was influential in theater too. He was he and his wife Judith started the Living Theater, and it was big and off Broadway, avant garde stuff. And like they say that his cast would perform plays on LSD, just kind of innovative. But he was only right. The guy looked like 90 in the movie, and he was only 60 when he died a couple of years after the movie. So it's but you got to see that. You're gonna die in there. Oh, it's so scary.
Wow.
But that's when they switched modes, you know, because originally the first Poltergeist movie was supposed to be about the graveyard, and the second one was about American Indians, which is just whatever people are called anymore. I don't know, but American Indians,
Native Americans,
them, and it became more of a thing about them. And the Native American guy was Will Sampson, who also died. Will Sampson was the guy, really tall American Indian guy, and he was. I remember mostly because he was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and he was the guy that threw the bathroom sink out the window and escaped at the end of that movie.
Yeah.
And he played a good guy in this movie who was trying to sort of curtail the curse, you know, with the Native American curse. And they said he had an actual exorcism on the set of this because he felt uncomfortable with it, with the subject matter, etc. Huh. And Jo Beth Williams, who was in Poltergeist 2, said that after that exorcism, she said all her pictures in her house were crooked.
So they kind of accidentally did a real exorcism.
Something, yeah. And she said every time she'd get home, she'd straighten them out, and she'd leave, and they'd be all crooked again when she got home again.
Speaking of exorcisms, by the way, you know what was on TV again last night?
What?
On the Travel Channel, Demon House.
Oh, really?
Zach Bagans' paranormal documentary I edited. It's always fun when things pop up like that unexpectedly.
And your association with that?
I edited it and produced it, yeah.
It's a fun movie.
I edited it just feet away from where you're sitting now. You could be being possessed by a demon as we speak, and
not
you wouldn't
me.
Know it.
I bathe myself in white light whenever I walk into your place.
Hilarious.
No, it was that was a scary documentary.
Thank you.
That was really good.
Travel Channel will probably air it again between now and Halloween, I would guess. But yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend it. I love that William Castle-esque disclaimer at the beginning of it. You know, take responsibility for your own viewing because you never know.
And that's
what happened in Poltergeist. You know, that thing came out of the TV.
And there were people on Twitter, because the theory being that there are some people, demonologists, that believe that those evil spirit can transmit itself electronically, basically. And so they put a disclaimer up that just watching this movie could cause stuff to happen.
Yeah,
around you. And what's crazy is I've seen people on Twitter that said they stopped watching when they saw that disclaimer. They just turned it off.
Yeah,
and other people, lots of people, when it first came out, talking about stuff, just telling stories about things that happened in their apartment and their living room and stuff while they were watching the movie. Like, I was watching this thing fall off a shelf in my bedroom or whatever. Yeah. So it's funny.
It is funny. I love that.
You just defended Coast to Coast AM, and you're looking at me now like I'm crazy.
It's showbiz. No,
anyways,
I'm not looking at you like you're crazy. It's a good. It's very showbiz.
And look, I'm paranormal agnostic. I'm open minded to the whole thing, but I'm also not a big believer either.
It was a disturbing story. Mm-hmm. It really was. And I recommend it. But it was, you know, Zach is very good at showbiz. He's like Barnum, you know.
Yeah,
he is. You know, enter at your own risk, kind of thing. So Samson had a heart and lung transplant 6 weeks before he died. And
wow.
I know, right?
Both?
And pardon?
Had both?
Both, yeah.
Jeez.
And when he died, his death was ascribed to severe preoperative malnutrition and postoperative kidney failure and fungal infection.
So he was already he was already malnutritioned before he went in for the before he went into the operation.
I don't know, which 6 weeks afterwards? I'm not sure.
It was preoperative malnutrition, though.
Okay, yeah.
Seems to imply it was before the operation. He was already malnourished, and then
would you do
afterwards
that?
He had a fungal infection, and you would think that they'd be like, dude, we need to get your weight up before.
Or we're not doing you.
But it might have just been, we got to do it now, and you've got to take the risk.
Yeah, maybe so.
Because they'll do the same. If your blood pressure is too low, they won't do a transplant. They'll just be like, look, we're wasting this donated organ on you because you probably won't survive the surgery, you know?
But so. Will Sampson died on June 3rd of 1987. He was only 53 years old.
Oh.
Which is, when did One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest come out? Was it 77, 76?
Something like that, yeah.
My aunt worked in a mental institution in Michigan, and she watched that movie. She said that was the most accurate portrayal of a sanitarium.
Nurse Ratched was an accurate portrayal. Yeah. Oh man.
the sternness is the, because my aunt was like that too. She was hardcore, and she's the one that said, if you know, when you're passing somebody's door, you know, you only forget to duck once because you don't know what's going to come flying out that door. And she would tell me stories about people swallowing silverware and when they still gave them silverware. But I remember picking her up at work and seeing the people up in the windows were open and they were like hanging out and waving at us, and it was scary. Talk about kinder trauma.
Well, I remember I read the book, and the book was, of course, fantastic.
Yeah.
And then, but because of that, the movie was a bit of a letdown for me because it was very much, it felt like a fast-forwarded Cliff Notes version of the book. I felt like they barely touched on it compared to the better book adaptations, which I think are more thorough. But it's still considered a great classic. Mm-hmm. I almost wish I hadn't read the book first.
Yeah.
You know, just so I can enjoy DeVito and all those guys.
Nicholson was amazing.
And Nicholson, yeah.
Yeah. That was something else, that movie. So the next one, I think, is that we would talk about is
O'Rourke?
She was Heather O'Rourke. Heather O'Rourke is next on timeline. Yeah. Because there's one other person.
Which, to me, is the next, you know, up there with Dominique Dunn is a level of tragedy because she was so young. She was only 12.
Yeah, that was something else.
So Heather O'Rourke was the main little girl in it. They're here, girl. And she was in. She was in the sequels, too, and... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It says so on her grave.
Well, it says what?
It says Carol Ann, a Poltergeist 1, 2, and 3 on her little nameplate on her crypt. Yeah. Little tiny nameplate.
See, mine would have said, I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, she was, but I guess Spielberg saw her at a cafeteria, canteen or whatever on a set. And had her in for an audition and wasn't too thrilled, but somebody else saw her and suggested he bring her back in again. And this time he had her scream. And they say he made her scream until she cried.
Wow.
And he says, you're the one.
She was great in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she really was. She was a decent actress.
And I just saw Jojo Rabbit by Taika Waititi, the great New Zealander director who did, What We Do in the Shadows, the really funny vampire comedy that was hilarious and amazing. And he did the Thor Ragnarok movie, which is probably top two or three favorite Marvel movies so far. Anyways, he did this thing called Jojo Rabbit. It's about this kid. It's a somewhat, it's like a dramedy. It takes place in World War II Germany. And this kid is based on a novel. This little kid is hardcore into the Hitler Youth. And his mother is more part of the resistance. But he's just a true believer, and he's got an imaginary friend, which is basically like a silly version of Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
The kid was so good in it. He was really excellent, and Titus said that the way he casts is find a kid who's already pretty much the character, so you're not really asking him to act.
Because how
much can you ask an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old to have acting chops, you know, at that age? They're not going to have it. But if you find a kid who's already liked the part, then he's going to say the line the way he would actually say it anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really interesting. So I wonder if that's, you know, probably what Heather O'Rourke was probably basically that little girl.
I mean, she worked a lot for someone that age. She had some,
you're right,
she
her
had
IMDb
credits.
Credits are long.
Yeah. I mean, she was in that movie. And we'll talk, I think we should talk about him a little bit, River Phoenix movie that she did with him. Called Surviving. It was a TV movie, but who also was a Halloween death. But she also, Spielberg liked Heather O'Rourke because they say she could memorize a 60-page script in an hour, which
No really? Kidding.
That's
no
what they way. Say. I mean, she had only a few lines probably, but still.
Yeah, she could. How many lines out? She had three.
Yeah, okay. But still, that's wow. what they say. That was one of the big attractions. And she was professional. She could act. She mm-hmm. could scream. And she had good memory skills. And she was, well, yeah, she was in all three. I think she was the only one.
I think she was in all three.
No, Tangina, Zelda Rubinstein, she was in all three.
Oh, okay.
But we'll talk about her in a minute. Mm. But she was in all three, and I don't think she finished number three. Didn't they use a
I
double?
Don't know.
I think
she died during filming.
Yeah. Mm. I'm pretty sure they used the back of somebody's head for some of the scenes.
Yeah.
And that movie, you know, she died of an illness. We'll talk about it in a second. But that movie, Poltergeist 3, which was filmed, they used the Hancock Building in Chicago, which is like my favorite building ever,
yeah.
as buildings go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also the building where Chris Farley died in.
Uh-huh.
But they filmed there. Nancy Allen and Tom Skerritt were her aunt and uncle that they shipped her away to because mm-hmm. Joe Beth Williams and Craig T. Nelson wouldn't be in the third one. But it was all a very unhealthy looking cast in it. You know, Heather O'Rourke did not look healthy in the movie. Nancy Allen. Allen didn't look healthy in the movie. It was just not a good looking movie.
Huh.
And the Hancock Building was haunted, and there were some good scares in it. But I remember when they filmed that around Chicago, that was pretty cool to see some of those people. And I knew a couple of the extras too,
yeah.
And I was like, I couldn't even. I was so impressed. These guys were extras in
Poltergeist 3.
No, it was a big deal. I mean, I still remember meeting newscasters in Detroit, and I was like, I was so starstruck. And God bless them. I mean, they were. But I was so enamored with them. I was like, oh, my God, you're in a real movie. Poltergeist 3.
You've stood in the vicinity of real actors.
Yes. Yes.
So what happened to Heather O'Rourke?
Well, she was apparently she was out camping with her family and got some sort of parasite from the water. And
That's why I don't like camping.
Well,
stay inside, man.
That's why I don't drink anything but bottled water.
I camped when I was younger and I had the time to waste. But now I'm good, man.
No, camping. I like camping. I like being out in the woods, but I want my bed.
Then I want to go to a nice hotel.
And a shower.
Oh, yeah. I'll hike all day. I'm good with that. Yeah,
I'm
that's
a real
fun.
Pussy smells. When it comes to stuff like
I'll
that.
Friggin' smell the pine trees and look at the birds and.
Leaving now.
Skip some stones, and then it starts, the sun goes down. I'm like,
They should make campfires so they, you know, non scented campfire logs.
Or at least one that doesn't blow the smoke in your face.
Yes.
Yeah.
When we were in Boy Scouts, they used to send us out on these weird little trips to, you know, bacon stretcher. They'd send you to another cabin. And
bacon
to go,
stretcher?
It was something they made up. And they just said, no, you got to go over to that next cabin and see if they have a bacon stretcher. And it was just something they did for, like, sort of a hazing
of
a thing. And I think smoke shifter was one of those, too. Yeah, do you have an extra smoke shifter?
I grew up loving camping. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I grew up in the outdoors. But now that I'm older,
I'm older.
I'm good. I want to sleep on a comfortable bed and with air conditioning and have television.
I don't
television
leave the house after 10. Not even after 9 anymore.
Yeah.
I'm just too freaking old.
Bad things happen, man.
No. I get tired.
I just don't want to get eaten by something. That's my main thing.
Yeah.
I don't want to get eaten by a mountain lion or a bear.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I don't want to get eaten by a mountain lion or a bear. I would feel so stupid if that happened to me because I'm like, you know, my ancient ancestors probably dreamed of being able to sleep somewhere where they didn't have to worry about getting eaten by a bear.
Yeah.
And here I am, you know, 1,000 years later, I went and sought it out.
Yeah.
And slept under the stars when I didn't need to in, you know, some bear's backyard. So,
When I was in my first Holy Communion, the night of my communion, my mother said I could do whatever I wanted to. So we went to go see the movie Grizzly.
That's what you wanted to do.
Yes. And I do. It did affect me.
I don't want to get eaten by a bear. That's like one of my top three priorities in my life.
Oh my God! What was that guy in the video that was videoing him?
Yeah.
Oh my God! The
documentary. Yeah.
Oh my God! And all you hear is that bear like snarfing on him,
and the wife or the lady's yelling at him to fight back, and then she gets eaten. Yeah.
You know, I'm just saying. You know.
Well, I'm not. Well, look, I wouldn't ever think I could talk to the bears.
Right. It's like Tippi Hedren letting those lions run around her house. You know, it's like, okay, you cannot cry foul if that thing eats one of your kids. You know, it didn't, thankfully. But, but my God, you know, you play with, you know, those things. Did you see that
How
documentary?
How do you get homeowners insurance if you have a friggin' lion?
Thank you. It's like roadside wine tasting.
It seems like a liability.
But did you see the Siegfried and Roy documentary that was on a couple of weeks ago?
I didn't.
That was pretty fascinating. And, you know, they're just walking around, you know, laying on these lions and tigers and, you know, just, you know, underneath their chin, you know, scratching. I'm like, you guys, you're going to get hurt.
Exactly. You smell like a steak to him and he's hungry. Eventually he's going to be like, I'm going to eat this guy.
Yeah. So yeah. they said something happened. Well, obviously something happened in that performance in Vegas when that tiger grabbed the one by the throat
by the
and dragged
head or whatever.
Him off stage. And somewhere that video footage exists.
Oh, yeah.
That would be fascinating to see in a horrible way.
Yes.
But fascinating in a I can't look away way.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, don't befriend animals.
Let
that
the predators
can turn on
have
you.
Their space, man.
Yeah. Yeah, that, let's say that video of that woman going, the shark, you're swimming in the shark's home. You know,
right.
don't go in the ocean. That's the shark's house.
And he might think you're a seal.
So anyway, back to poor little Heather O'Rourke.
I also don't want to get eaten by a shark. I don't go in the ocean.
No, you don't.
You don't either, right? I'm not big about going
in
the ocean.
Not above my knees. No fucking way. Right. No, it scares me to death.
Not above my knees.
It's a whole world down there.
Again, I used to do it as a kid because I was stupid. I didn't know any better.
Yeah.
And I don't do it now. I'm fine with it. I'll look at the ocean.
I can't touch the bottom. That is horrifying.
What's down there?
No. I'm sorry.
Good for people that are into it.
And those people that surf and get bit by sharks, what is that? And then they go back in. What is that? What is that? I don't understand. Does not compute. So, back to the parasite.
Yeah.
So Heather O'Rourke was treated for the parasite and supposedly finished. But then she was having stomach
cramps. So she was supposedly okay.
Yeah. She was really cleared of this
not
parasite.
Not finished like she was supposedly dead. But
correct.
She beat it.
Correct.
Or so they thought.
So one day she was having breakfast with her family, I guess, or she was going to, and she came downstairs and she said she had cramps and her toes and fingers were bloated and blue and she couldn't swallow. So they rushed her to a medical center, who then took her to a children's hospital in San Diego, and she had a bowel obstruction, and it actually split her intestine.
Ouch!
And she died of septic shock.
Ouch.
So that is crazy because there's a lot of, talk about abuse, which I don't subscribe to. And I'm not saying I know enough about it.
There's claims that she was abused.
Well, just the symptoms ignored for a long period of time. And I can't say there are people that are obsessed with the death of Heather O'Rourke.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of them reach out to me and, this person and that person is really responsible.
Yeah.
But ultimately, this poor little girl is at Westwood Cemetery. And they say she haunts the Paramount lot.
Really? What does she do?
They filmed Happy Days there, and she was on an episode or two of Happy Days, and they say she haunts the soundstage.
Huh.
I don't know what she does. Did she say they're here all the time? I don't know. But they use.
I can hear you. I can't see you.
Mommy, where are you, Mommy?
Go toward the light. Yeah.
Then and Red Fox supposedly haunts it too because he dropped that on the soundstage there. But different soundstage. But yeah, I don't know. But poor little Heather. That was a shock.
That was a real shock. I think I don't know if I've told the story before, but that's like when I worked at the Jim Henson lot. The Carpenters had recorded there because A&M Records was founded on the Henson lot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still a world-class recording studio there. Mm-hmm. And we used to see, I saw Paul McCartney was there one day, which was amazing. And Chris Cornell from Soundgarden was there one day. And I got to go in and look around one time. And the guys in there said it was the Carpenters recorded there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the Carpenters studio inside because there's I think there's two or three different recording studios in this little building. And, they say that the Carpenters sound recording studio is haunted.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody told a story while I was there, and they said that somebody, because the place records 24 hours a day, there's people in there recording, and they said that somebody was in there recording, and it got to be about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and the guy that works at the place that was running the recording goes, okay guys, once you take a break, go get, quote unquote lunch. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, but go get your lunch and we'll resume in an hour. And the producer guy was like, whoa, I decide when we stop recording, what's the deal? And they said, well, this place is basically haunted, and every night between 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, our recordings get messed up. And the guy's like, bullshit. And he goes, yeah, everybody always says that. So we kept one of the recordings. And the guy does this playback, and it sounds like the room is full of people, but there's nobody there, basically. So it just sounds like voices on top of voices on top of voices on top of voices.
They're attributing that to Karen Carpenter.
Yeah, because it was her. It was kind of, it's known as the Carpenter Studio, there. So that's, I heard that. I don't know. I kind of heard that secondhand from somebody that worked there. So I don't know if that's how truthful that is. But, that's the same lot. That was... It's now known as the Henson lot, but that was Charlie Chaplin's lot.
And they still have his little footprints
They
there.
Have his footprints in the concrete as the tramp, and they have his barber chair is still there. I got to sit in it one time. And they time when they were doing remodeling, they pulled up the floorboards and found old beer bottles from, like, that era, the silent film era, you know?
That's very cool.
Yeah, because originally, now it's a sound stage. Back then, because it was silent films, it wasn't enclosed. And then eventually they enclosed it when talkies came along. But I got to hang out in his what was his editing studio, which is now someone's office. It's a great place if you ever get a chance, and you can do tours. A lot of people don't know this, but the Henson lot, you can sign up if you're a tourist or just whoever. You can go get a walking tour. It's a little space. It's not a very big area, but you can get a tour, and they'll show you all this stuff. And people don't know it, but if you contact them, they do it. They do it all the time.
Have you ever seen that Puppet Up show that they do there?
Mm-mm.
It's like a really racy improv version of the Muppets.
It's I would love
filthy
to.
And Jim Brian Henson's always there, and he's a really nice guy. He just talks to everybody, but it's an adult Muppet show, not with the
the
trademarked
Muppets.
It's all improv, and it's so vulgar and
people
funny.
The Henson company is doing all kinds of stuff,
mm-hmm.
all kinds of cutting edge things, not just for little kids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the Muppet Barn, is what they called it, which mm-hmm. was kind of at the back.
Yeah, you showed me that.
And we'd be able to just walk through it anytime we wanted. You could just go in and walk through, and it was a workshop where they were actually making the Muppets.
Yeah.
And I remember they had, like, Bear in the Big Blue House was in there, and some of the Kermits and Piggies and other Miss Piggies and others were in there, and you could just walk through whenever you wanted to and look at the Muppets being made. And they were always doing cool stuff on that soundstage while we were there. So yeah,
it's neat. Anyway. It's cool that they put gave a tribute to Charlie Chaplin by putting the Kermit statue with the little tramp costume
dressed as a tramp.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's tipping his hat to Crazy Girl Strip Club across the street on La Brea.
But I gotta say, I'm gonna you know, when people tell stories in Los Angeles and Hollywood, people repeat stories and they're as their own.
Sure.
You know, this and this. Well, I told you before we started that there's an article that I contributed to in the Hollywood Reporter that I just got a notification that was published.
Uh-huh.
And I talk with authority about Karen Carpenter's ghost.
Oh, really?
It's down to you.
Oh, really? you told that story in the Hollywood Reporter.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But it said, now they wrote that it. I saw that she's seen there, and I never said that. So, you know, it's another one of those things
that gets
repeated.
It's now we are a part of Hollywood lore now. People are going to tell that story all
good
over appearance. The place. So once again, we have sirens going by, so that is not you in traffic. That is us. So stop checking your mirror.
It's probably the world is on fire.
It is the season. It's the Santa Ana winds have been going. We've been getting a heat wave here in LA. It's been like 90 degrees every day.
And like
and
no
fires are everywhere.
Humidity. I mean, every time I get out of my car,
so
I get electrical shocks from my...
It's so dry. I wish I owned a humidifier or something, because it's been bad.
It's not nice.
Yeah. So anyways, it's not a great time to be in Southern California right now. But it'll be nice next week, because that's how fall is. But yeah, we've had a lot of fires. So if anybody here listening...
Oh, yeah.
Is getting
I think
fire,
one of them may have burned down that where the... is it Indian Dunes Park where the Twilight Zone accident happened? That's in Castaic. And
that little gully burned down again?
Yeah, it used to be like a mini bike or motocross park.
It was some type of park.
Yeah.
I remember that, yeah. Where the helicopter crash killed
Vic Morrow
and the two kids.
One of the little, two of the kids.
Two of the kids,
right,
he was carrying two of them.
But it's really like right there.
Have you ever seen the video of that?
Yeah.
It's gnarly.
Yeah, it is.
And blades go right into them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was at the Well last night, this bar, after we did our, we were on the Today Show in Australia yesterday.
Good day, mate.
Good day, mate. Talking to Lachlan, the producer, and on our little earpieces, and we were out on Sunset Boulevard. They did it outside, and then afterwards, it was next to the Well, which is a popular kind of divey type bar there, and I went in afterwards, and while I was sitting at the bar, this guy ran up. Because he had put in a food order, and he ran up to cancel it because he had just gotten an alert on his phone that he needed to evacuate his house.
Mm-hmm.
So he must have been up in the Simi Valley area or one of those areas where the fire's happening.
Sherman Oaks got hit yesterday, too.
He's like, I got to cancel my order. I got to go get my family out.
This is how bad
crazy.
It is.
Yeah.
I've got no Reuben sandwich for me. No, I should. No, I don't mean that.
Can
That's
I get
not
that
nice.
To go? No, they ended up, the guy, well, I think because they just, I think because it was about to come out, the guy said, do you want it to go? And he's like, yeah. So they put it in a box.
Wow, that sucks. I mean, they're for the grace of God. I mean, yeah. It's so scary. It is so scary. Because, I mean, remember that? You took some amazing pictures of the Hollywood sign one a couple of years
that
ago.
That was amazing. Yeah, I went up.
Now you
I remember my girlfriend at the time, I dragged her up to the roof of the Grove parking structure because mm-hmm. I thought I was trying to think of a good elevated area that was public access that I could get to. And I
That's
went up
so
there
LA.
And I just remember she was starving and I'm like, no, I have to get these pictures. And I got these great photos of the fire burning, you know, almost looks like it's engulfing the Hollywood sign.
That was
back when that happened. Yeah.
You know, and there's
and
nothing,
then we went to get food. I'm not a total monster.
There's nothing more seriously more beautiful than a sunset when we have fires.
Smoke sets is what I call them. Yeah.
They're stunning. I mean, this is the purple and pink and
because the reason a lot of people don't realize the Southern California sunsets are so good is because of the smog
mm-hmm.
and smoke is just like smog on freaking, you know, steroids. So yeah, it just causes the light to diffuse.
It's beautiful.
Even more. And
those
scatter,
colors
yeah.
are spectacular.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I hope your man. I hope all those people. That,
so the sunset, created by the smoke from your house and dreams that burned down is beautiful. Anyways, yeah, thinking anybody listening that's in those, you know, thinking about you. If you're in the path of any of these fires, we live out in the flats. So if we ever burn, the whole city burned, basically. We're not up in the hills or the canyons or
right.
anything like that. Yeah.
Right.
So it's just something we see from the distance. All right. Who's next on the
The last one we're going to hit, I think, is Zelda Rubinstein.
She is amazing. So Zelda Rubinstein, she was 4'3".
Mm-hmm.
And what was she? What else? What were you? She was in
They referred to her a couple of times as a munchkin, the magic munchkin. And what side of the rainbow did you come from?
Which, I mean, she was like 9 when that movie was made, so she's not
right.
in it, but
her acting debut was in the movie Under the Rainbow, that Carrie Fisher, Chevy Chase movie, which just basically expounded on this drunken talk show appearance that Judy Garland did on it was Jack Parr when she said all the munchkins were drunks and they had orgies. You had to pick them. The police came with butterfly nets. I mean, that's something that she said. So thus, it was you know, portrayed as this wild, crazy, hanging from the rafters, swinging from the chandeliers lifestyle when they made The Wizard of Oz, and they put the munchkins up at the Culver Hotel.
Yeah, so, and the Culver Hotel is a famous hotel that was owned, it was allegedly won by John Wayne in a poker game with Charlie Chaplin. And Charlie Chaplin had owned it, and John Wayne basically won it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that one of the hotel rooms in there that was supposedly John Wayne's room, you can still see the mounts in the floor from where he had the rotating bed installed.
They don't have air conditioning in that place. I know that.
And I've heard, because I've heard people that have gotten offices, you turn rooms into offices, and they said if you're east or west facing, you just bake in there.
Yeah.
The sun
it's
in the afternoon
nice.
Just destroys those rooms.
I mean, they had
it's a really cool hotel.
20 by
and
20
I love
piece
the
of land that they wanted to build a hotel on to make use. And it's right across from MGM. So
it's kind of wedge-shaped. It's almost shaped like the Flatiron Building kind of shape. Yeah,
and
but
the munchkins were put up there while they made The Wizard of Oz.
It's a really cool piece of classic LA history. And it's I love the restaurant bar area there.
Is
really a kind of nice
beautiful.
Area to hang out. Yeah.
Yeah. The whole munchkins being drunk, you know, orgies, that's just, like I said, Judy Garland just made it up.
It's an exaggeration. They did say that, I've heard that they did say, and you would probably know this better than me, but that at that time, if you're a little person, you were kind of the only little person you knew.
Yeah.
You might have known one or two more, and all of a sudden, there's like 200 of you in a hotel filming, you know, down the street.
Yeah, they met their
MGM.
Little wives and husbands.
It would have been, it was like, holy cow, look at all of us. And they used to supposedly put them in a steak bed truck to drive them down the street to where the studio was.
Probably.
They would just throw them in like cattle and drive them down there because MGM was just, you know, a quarter of a mile or half a mile down the boulevard there. So, yeah.
I think they made $100 a week, those guys.
Yeah. And the Lollipop Brigade singing guys, they literally cast those three singers on the set. They just went down the line and had each guy sing it.
Mm-hmm.
And were like, okay, yeah, you three do it.
You know who they were, right? One of them was, Jerry Marin just died.
Yeah.
He was the last surviving adult munchkin. There are still three kids that are left. But the other one was Harry Dahl, who was the little lead in Freaks.
Oh,
And he and his sister played a romantic couple in the movie Freaks. But yeah, and that, there was one other one. I forget the other one.
Yeah.
But Jerry Merriam was prolific. I mean, he'd been in every... He's been in all the H.R. Puffin stuff, all the Sid and Marty Krofft shows. He was on Bewitched. He jumped out of a cake at Jimmy Stewart's bachelor party.
He was
kind of
like the Peter Dinklage of his...
No.
No? Okay.
I can't say anymore. And I won't. Okay. No, I mean, he was very well known, but he well known for doing a lot of different things. And Peter Dinklage is a broody little person. He is. I mean, that's probably on PC.
He's brilliant, but yes.
Yes, he's a great actor.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's never, you don't see a smile too often.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was downtown with our friend Kelly downtown LA like a couple years ago, and she spotted him outside. He'd just come out of like a bar or something in downtown LA, and we zipped around the block, and he was gone like magic.
Like a magic munchkin. That's yes. It's from the movie. It's not us. It's from the movie.
Yeah, he was gone, and I missed my chance to see him. Yeah,
he lives at the El Royale over on Vine Street.
What?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Hugh Hillhauser used to live there.
One of the nice fancy hotels that's on Rossmore?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Or hotel, I mean apartment buildings.
Yeah.
Where the one of the ones that Mae West used to own, right?
Mae, yeah, she lived a couple doors down at the Ravenswood. But yeah, this one, William Frawley, George Raft.
And she owned the building, and she lived, the top floor was her penthouse apartment.
Well, it was actually the sixth. She didn't go all the way up to the top. She didn't want it because there was no air conditioning. It was hot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. And she, is it true that she supposedly bought the building next door because she didn't like the color of it?
That's the legend. There's no proof of that.
Yeah,
but it's
she bought it and repainted it so that she could repaint it because she was tired of looking at it. Yeah.
You know what her beauty secret was?
I don't.
A coffee enema and an orgasm every day.
All right. I mean, I can get behind like one of those things.
She was something else. And also, supposedly, this monster in bed like had bedded everybody, but name one, and you can't. There's nobody bragging that they had an affair with Mae West. It's true.
Yeah. Marilyn Monroe, you know, everybody that looked at her twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Scott?
So Zelda Rubinstein. God bless Zelda.
Moving on.
She was, she started her own Little People Theater Company. I mean, she was really, she never played, my friend Sadie was like that too. She'd do everything, but she wouldn't play a circus person.
What, your friend Sadie was?
A midget.
Yes.
Yeah, she was the one from
famous.
Transylvania, one of the Transylvanians in the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Gotcha,
but
yeah.
She would do anything but circusy stuff.
She didn't want something that made fun of them, made them look like freaks.
Right.
That makes sense.
And Zelda was also quite adamant about things like that too, and she was also, this is back before it became a thing. She had a huge like gay following, I guess, but she used to do these HIV wear your condoms ads, like pointing at her like an older woman pointing at a younger person, younger male, saying, you know, wear your condoms or something for HIV prevention. And you know, so she was at the forefront of all that. Have you ever seen her footprints are at the Vista Theater underneath the marquee there?
Oh, really?
Because they have this sort of alternative Chinese theater called the Vista. And it's all cult movie.
It's right at Sunset and Hollywood, right? Is
that the one? Yeah, where they meet.
Hollywood-ish? Yeah, the Sunset Junction area.
Like the guys from Dark Shadows,
which is where the set for Intolerance famously was over there. Yep.
Yes. And they had the cast of Poltergeist, cast of Ed Wood. They had the premiere of Ed Wood there,
and
actually.
Ed Wood's office was in the building.
Yeah.
It was in that.
Yeah,
which is being torn down. No.
The office is, not the Vista.
I didn't know they were
torn down.
That sucks, man. Yeah, there's little two-story offices there that are connected to the Vista, and the second floor, one of them was Ed Wood's office.
Yeah.
No, man.
So Zelda's footprints are underneath. I mean, Bud Cort, Mary Warnoff from, you know, the Warhol movies and Rock and Roll High School, and... So Zelda actually, you know, another weird story about her. She was in October of 07, she was in a shopping mall in Manila in the Philippines when this there was a gas explosion.
Wow.
And it injured like 150 people, killed 11 people. And she, after that, she had already had health issues, but the fumes, you know, her exposure to all those chemicals sort of exacerbated it. And when she got back to Los Angeles, she was in the Barlow Respiratory Hospital just off Sunset. And she died at 76 in January of 2010.
From?
Well, it's respiratory issues.
Yeah.
It was a respiratory hospital, so lung issues, breathing issues.
Yeah.
So really, you know, and they say that the curse of Poltergeist continues. The one thing I found really interesting is that, well, the little boy, Oliver Robbins, he claims that he was almost strangled by that doll, that clown doll. He said it was a mechanical doll, and they said it went haywire. He said that during the filming. But in April 2015, Heather O'Rourke's family or somebody sells Heather's old... Are you done?
Getting the drink,
the beverage. So Heather O'Rourke's family were selling a lot of Heather's stuff online. And in April 2015, somebody bought a Cabbage Patch doll that belonged to Heather O'Rourke.
No kidding.
And they said that after that, things went haywire in their lives. They said, you know, his wife's brother was in a car accident. 2 days later, her father was in a coma. Or find out his
Cabbage Patch, man.
Yeah. Her best friend died of heart failure, and his... Her childhood friend, you know, a few weeks later killed herself. And they say it was all down to Heather O'Rourke's Cabbage Patch.
I think it was the Cabbage Patch Kids' past life. Yeah. You know, when they always have the story. Did you know that? You weren't an 80s kid, so you know. Every Cabbage Patch Kid came with, like, a backstory, I think. Or was that Pound Puppies?
I don't know.
I think Pound Puppies did, too. But, yeah, they all had, like, a name. It was like adopting like a real person.
Oh, they got
basically.
Birth certificates. Yeah, that's right. I remember
yeah.
that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I wonder what her Cabbage Patch doll's name was.
That'd be interesting.
I just, man, when you're watching that movie and there's the creepy clown doll, mm-hmm. and that's, you know, when that attack scene is, mm-hmm. was, I think I saw it was ranked like the 20th scariest horror movie moment ever by some group.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it is a scary scene.
So many childhood, I mean, the fact that, though, the other thing that we didn't even talk about is that they, you know, towards the end of the movie, when Joe Beth Williams slides into that pool that's being dug out.
And all the skeletons come up.
And they say that some of them were real and that might've been caused it. You know, they
really?
Say that some of them were brought in by prop masters,
and
but
they
say that there
people?
Were real skulls and real bones in there. I mean, it's not ridiculous because
yeah.
the stuff is realistic, and it was also covered in mud and stuff. But do you remember that? Remember that Elmer McCurdy story? That old bandit who was his body was put on display. This is in the 1800s, and it was with a sign saying, you know, the bandit Elmer McCurdy was ambushed or killed by law enforcement. Mm-hmm. But they were. It was like a state fair attraction, and people were putting coins in his mouth for good luck. And then it ended up in Long Beach in a haunted house, painted fluorescent colors.
Huh.
And people just thought it was a prop. And then they were filming an episode of the $6 Million Man in that haunted house, and somebody knocked it, and the arm came off, and it was like, it was a human.
They realized it's real.
Yeah, so the coroner had to be brought in and everything, and they traced it back to this old outlaw named Elmer McCurdy, and he was buried. He was buried in a proper grave after that, but he was, they did the autopsy. There was like a foot worth of coin in his belly, you know, because people were doing it for good luck, and he's painted like 20
crazy.
Different fluorescent colors. It's a great story. So when you know, there is an element of, that's interesting because that stuff is also real.
I was looking up, the house was located in Simi Valley. Mm-hmm. So they filmed the exteriors for the house anyways. The interiors were done on a soundstage. And same with, E.T. was filmed in Tujunga, mm-hmm. right there at the other end of the valley. So Spielberg in that early 80s era was obsessed with suburbia in the valley, basically.
Yeah.
That was kind of the settings for his things. And it's fun watching E.T. because when they do the big chase scene, you can actually see some of those tract homes are still under construction.
Oh, yeah.
As they're going. Yeah, it's really cool. Some of them are just framed in. You know,
oh,
they haven't
cool.
been—they haven't been completely built yet. And I would love to own that, like one of those houses, and be able to see what your house looked like
yeah.
while it was being built. You know, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Wow.
So and you can look up I don't know if I assume that the Poltergeist house is still there. I do know that the ET house is still there.
Poltergeist is still there.
And you can look them up on Google Street View if you can look up the address on Google.
I wonder if they do anything for Halloween.
It's cool, man. If I had the ET house. You would know it was the ET house just from looking at it.
There's the
embrace it.
Yeah, there's a house in South Pass where they filmed Halloween. Mm-hmm. There's an episode where or part of the movie, the first Halloween movie, Jamie Lee Curtis has a pumpkin and she leaves her house and she sits on the corner and waits for her friend Annie to pick her up. And the people there have pictures of it and a pumpkin on their front porch and just say, you know, be nice and return the pumpkin and you're welcome to take the pictures.
That's cool.
It is so cool.
But I, sometimes it backfires. I think it was the Goonies house. I read that they were having, they had problems with people. It was beyond just people just taking pictures. People were leaving shit behind in the, you know, trash and stuff in the front yard. And it was just like being, breaking stuff. And it's like not being cool about it.
Yeah, it's really too bad. I love that movie so much.
But the whole, you know, the truffle shuffle scene and all that stuff that takes place in that front yard of that house. And people just show up under.
I think they put
dicks.
Tarps on it now because you can't even look at it.
They had to
anymore.
Do something, and that was that. That's why, because it was just getting out of control. People
that's
were
so
not being
sad.
Cool, you know.
That's so sad.
And like when I went to Cleveland a few years ago, you know, the Christmas Story was shot there, and the house is a museum now. It's so cool. The house itself, there's a house across the street that's been turned into a museum. It's got like movie props and stuff in it, and then. The house itself still looks basically like it did in the movie, and they have the leg lamp in the front window.
That's
so
cool.
So you can go, everybody goes and gets their picture taken in front of it. It's really cool, yeah.
That is so neat. I love when people, it's just, you become part of pop culture. You can't sort of cry foul, although the internet has changed everything.
Yeah, if you bought the house 30 years ago, and you, it's kind of neat, it was in that movie, and it wasn't a big deal, but the fandom has gotten crazier since, I guess, because of the internet, you're right. But at the same time, if you buy a house like that, you know, they're not going to tell you.
Yeah,
oh, it's the house from whatever. You know,
those guys up on Cielo Drive, when they can't cry foul. Every one of those people on that street signed up for it.
That bought the house has moved in since the murders happened, so you know the street you're moving into.
Yeah, and I go.
I'm
up
surprised
there.
They haven't gated it.
I am too.
That they haven't put
I'm
a remote gate at the bottom.
I'm surprised they signed on.
Just to be like, dude, no more.
I drive up there every week on the tour, and every week there's at least one or two cars going up that street and going back down again.
So it's constant, that means. Yeah. It's like the Michael Jackson death house.
Yeah. It's
owned
it's,
by the owner of Ed Hardy.
It's bizarre that, Christian Audigé. But it is bizarre that they signed up for it, and I'm surprised they haven't gated that little street. I really am, and I wouldn't blame them if they did. It would break my heart if they did too.
Yeah,
but
at least you can still look at it from the Falcon's lair across the street.
I don't. Yeah, actually, don't go up Cielo Drive. I go across the way, so I don't
to Falcon Lair, which was Valentino's house, and then
Dora's Duke.
Yeah,
the
her
tobacco.
House. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which had a whole its whole other scandal happened with that. Yeah,
Curse of Benedict Canyon.
Yep.
So. I guess that's it. Oh, do you want to buy my Madonna tickets?
Hey, do you have Madonna tickets? Scott, tell us the story of what happened with you, and when's the concert?
Oh, it's like the first or second week of November. And
a lot of people are talking about it.
She's doing Five Nights at the Wiltern. And I figure, I'm a gay person. I got to go. You got to see Madonna once in your life.
You've never seen her before, right?
No.
So you're excited. I'm going to check it off the bucket list, right?
So
I don't think anybody bought her last album, but she's going to play some of
this
hits, I'm sure.
Worse. Oh
as long as she plays like Vogue.
It's all, all like school shooting stuff. And, you know, I don't want to be reminded of real life. You know, I want to get out of here to escape. So I bought this ticket. I signed up to a lottery because you have to sign up to a lottery to get the privilege of buying Madonna tickets. And I stupidly entered twice. And I think one day it was a $1,600 showed up on my credit card for Madonna tickets.
So $1,600.
So I got four tickets. So I'm like, okay. Then they sent, I got the CD. So I got the CD. And I swear, it's like, there's nary a musician to be found on it. It's all like auto-tune. And it's, I'm just too old for that. And this week, I just got the email from Ticketmaster saying that the time of the concert has been bumped up from 8:00 to 10:30 p.m.
What?
And
the
I'm like,
hell?
How self-indulgent is that woman?
Is it a weeknight concert?
I think it is.
Well, then maybe that's the reason.
What, to 10:30? Why would
that
you?
That is pretty damn late. You're right.
That's stupid. I mean, we are weeks ahead of time. Get it together. It's what it says.
It's
on
like
the
she already knows that she's going to be.
Yeah.
Horrible.
And she's probably going to be later than that.
Yeah, it'll probably be like 11:30.
I mean,
the time
screw her.
Out.
I don't like her that much. I mean, I would like to see her once in concert, but that sucks. And then it's all like this political shit. It's like, I don't pay for this. I don't
want
to hear
pop.
You.
You want to hear some pop music.
Yeah, play like a virgin. Play, you know, Material World. That's what I want to hear. I don't care what you think about politics.
Yeah.
Ugh. So if anyone wants my tickets, let me know.
Yeah.
Oh, she's going to be really good, though. Yeah.
But it'll be great. You'll have a great time. Yeah.
I mean, it'll speak to somebody, but
it's
not,
funny.
It
that's like
too
the,
old
it's the
for
exact
this.
Opposite of I saw Jackson Browne at the Greek a couple summers ago, and there was no opening act listed, but we assumed there was an opening act.
Mm-hmm.
And the concert was set to start at like 7 or 7.30, and we were parking our car at like 7.30, and the music started. Like, we're starting to walk over, and he's already playing.
Yeah.
He's like, I said I would be here at 7.30, yeah. and I'm playing at 7.30, bro. And he's like, I got to get out of here, man. I'm going to play my songs. I'm going to get the hell out.
We saw The Who about a week ago. That was great.
Nothing pisses people off more. Oh, did you at the Hollywood Bowl?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw Alison Martino was there. She was there last night, I think.
But man, were they good. And I sure wasn't expecting that. I thought it was going to be the geriatric concert, you know?
I saw them at Old Coachella.
Yeah.
The whatever they call it, mm-hmm. the desert, the thing they did in Coachella. They were great there, too. Yeah. They honestly were not any... Didn't seem like they'd lost a step.
No.
You know, since their glory days.
Yeah, they were the ones that are left. Right. are very good. Now, yeah. I didn't realize that Townsend was the spokesperson for the group. I'd never seen them before. But I always thought, you know, Roger Daltrey would be the master of ceremonies. But Pete Townsend is the guy that hosts the show.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought him and Daltrey were both, like, great.
They were great.
Fantastic.
And they played like a 30-minute thing from Tommy at the beginning, and that was like one of my favorite movies ever. I know it's purists probably go, oh, the movie sucked. I like this movie. But I loved the movie. That's how I got turned on to The Who.
Yeah.
So I loved it. But yeah, that was a good show. It was a good show. But I don't know. I think we're covered here.
Did we do it?
I think we're done.
We done pulled. Well, did you? Okay. Well, I can't let us wrap up without telling at least one ghost story.
Okay.
So. I know you've had a few interesting moments. I know when you had Decker, your dog, he used to see things.
Mm-hmm.
I remember you telling me that you were never a big ghost guy until you got your dog and being around Paramount Studios, Paramount and the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, which mm-hmm. were right next to each other. Your pet Decker would act odd walking around the neighborhood sometimes, right?
Yeah.
I remember you told me that... it wasn't when he would bark at something that wasn't there. It was when he would wag his tail at something that wasn't there that was the creepiest.
Yeah, that was
because that's like something is engaging with him. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Not just he sees something suspicious, but something is engaging.
Yeah, he would.
Back,
he was. You know? He was not a very. That was messed up. It wasn't very often where I got freaked out by stuff, but that was weird. Uh-huh. I had this little sensor because I don't want my dog on my bed. I'm sorry. You know, that's a thing of mine. No furniture, no animals on the furniture.
Yeah. I want to get a dog. And if I do, I may be at the foot of the bed.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, I'll get big pillows.
Down by my feet,
know?
Whatever I'm fine with. Yeah. But yeah, it is, sorry to dog owners, it is unsanitary to have them up by your head.
So, but I have the sensor.
They don't wipe their asses.
And
you don't want their asses on your pillows. Okay. I'm just going to be straight here.
It's true. So we had the sensor to put on the furniture, so if they jumped on the bed, it would beep, you know, and he wouldn't like that, so he got the bed. Same with the sofa when I left, just to discourage him. And we're sitting, Troy and I are watching TV, and the things are going all crazy in the bedroom. And I look, and Decker's right here at my feet.
Oh.
So this little thing is like beeping like crazy. That was weird.
And when we were on Coast to Coast, you used to see a guy.
Yeah,
in your,
yeah,
used to see a guy, Scott. Used to see somebody in your apartment. What? Mm-hmm. Tell me that.
Well, he was just the shape of a guy, a shadow, and I saw him standing. I woke up and he was standing in my doorway twice. I saw him.
Yeah,
and he just turned and walk into the other room,
and so, disappear. He wouldn't be in there anymore.
Right. Yeah, there was never any noise or nobody ever spoke.
And that's kind of where the other room was, where you had your tub of.
Sharon
rocks
Tate stuff,
and bricks
yeah.
and the Sharon Tate rocks were in there and all that stuff. The rocks that were from Sharon Tate's fireplace at Cielo Drive.
Right.
You got when they tore it down, yeah.
So now I got that. I haven't seen anything in a long time. Every once in a while I'll get like the hairs on my arm and the back of my neck, but I'll just go, you know what, leave me alone.
And what if you guys had an issue at your old shop location on Sunset?
Yeah.
You used to have somebody you would see right at the top because there was an upstairs area, which at the time was kind of where you had the museum mm-hmm. set up.
Yeah, spoke to us. You know, touched us, tapped us.
You
on the
and
back.
your fellow, you know, your coworkers saw your employees saw things, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It
like
was
a guy standing at the top of the stairs was one of the things I heard once.
Yeah, yeah, I think Jane saw that one.
Yeah,
and it was weird. I'll be working late in the shop now, and I'm literally leaning on the Jane Mansfield car,
right?
And you know, I've never ever get creeped out in my store. Never.
Yeah.
And that old place, though, I hated being in there because that place had a lot of memories to it. You know, it'd been around since the 20s.
Who
and,
knows what had happened in there before?
But my place was just an auto garage now. So, you know, anything that is around, we brought it with us.
Or it's an old mechanic.
Yeah, yeah.
But trying to change the oil in an old car, yeah.
It was never anything I was afraid of. My old shop, yes, that used to creep me out, and I did not like being there. But the stuff in my house, it never really, it was just like, that's weird. And I had, you know, I had people with all sorts of theories about who it was and why. But,
well, I still remember one of the very first things you and I ever filmed together was Jack Cassidy's apartment.
Yeah, that's
on
right.
Kings Road over in West Hollywood. And mm-hmm. at the time, I lived on that street.
That's right,
I lived
yeah.
at the other end of the block.
Yeah,
from Jack Cassidy's apartment. And Jack Cassidy was the father of Sean Cassidy and David Cassidy and ex-husband of
Shirley Jones.
And he was known to be gay. And he had this very nice penthouse, at least it was nice when we saw it, this very nice penthouse apartment in this apartment in West Hollywood. And he died in a fire, and his body was found kind of near the front door. He allegedly fell asleep on his couch with a lit cigarette and burned mm-hmm. up, basically. So they found what was left of him kind of by the front doors, mm-hmm. like maybe he tried to get out and didn't make it. And now it's a very, when we got in to see it, which was 15 years ago, probably.
Oh my God.
It was a really nice, at the time, it was the nicest apartment I'd ever been in. It was
yeah.
a beautiful penthouse apartment, like marble everything, beautiful sculptures and glassware and everything owned by this gay couple.
A-listers, A-gays.
We're
call them
A-gays,
A-gays, the ones with the money and the
yeah.
nice houses.
Yeah, yeah. And they had stories about it being haunted, and they had a picture of Jack Cassidy on the wall, kind of in the bar area.
In the bar.
Yeah, ironically.
Yeah.
And they had, I remember them telling a couple of stories. They had a friend staying over in the guest room, and he woke up in the middle of the night, and basically Jack Cassidy was standing in the doorway, and then just disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And then another time they came home and everything was on. Like all the electronics in the house were on.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie screen, they had a movie projector screen that was down and the stereo was on and the TV was on and all the stuff was running basically. And they knew they didn't leave anything on when they left.
Don't you hate it when your movie projector screen goes down?
It's so annoying. Just get back up
there,
man.
They were super nice
guys. I bring
guys.
Somebody over and I'm just so embarrassed. My movie screen's down. I'm so sorry. They were super nice guys. And there was one other one they said that whoever the ghost was, they assumed it was Jack Cassidy. Ironically, because he died in a fire. Apparently liked to take showers, and they would come home and the shower would be all wet, like somebody had just taken a shower and mm-hmm. you know, nobody was there, you know, they'd been gone all day. So I remember they said that they tried to get they looked out to one of, at the time, one of the psychic medium or ghost shows about coming in, and they basically were told by the show producers, it sounds like you have a friendly ghost, and if we bring our person in and stir things up, it might stop being a friendly ghost. So I thought it was kind of interesting, actually, because
as
a producer,
that doesn't sound like a legitimate producer.
As a show
at
producer,
all.
I'm like, hell, screw that. Mm-hmm. We're coming in. Like,
yeah,
that sounds
we're
like a great
push
show.
Buttons. We're going to poke
yeah,
it with a
we
stick.
We don't care what we leave you with. Yeah. Yeah. But no, they supposedly said, no, it sounds like you have a happy ghost, and let's leave him that way. And then they put the picture up to kind of appease, you know, the picture of Jack up, and mm-hmm. that was it.
Old Jack. He was a difficult man. I just watched that David Cassidy documentary, The Last Session. And he was recording a tribute album to his father when he died.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Jack was just a difficult person, not a pleasant person to be around.
And he supposedly had gotten into his family history toward the end of his life.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they were Irish, Cassidy. And they, right? I think they were Irish. And they he had discovered like what their family seal was.
Oh,
and
that's
so
right.
He
the
had
ring.
Rings made yeah. with the family seal, and he'd given that to his sons.
Yeah.
And that's how they helped identify his body, what was left of him, because he had the ring on after the fire.
Yeah, I got some hate mail over that one. When
over Jack Cassidy. When we put
it was
that
niece,
was in
I
Dearly Departed Volume 2, Volume 1, I think, had that
yeah.
segment in it.
Yeah, and his niece was after me, I think it was. And it just nasty.
Really?
Yeah, because
we didn't say anything negative, did we? I mean, we didn't talk about all like the gay stories about stuff he would do at parties and things. So I feel like we were pretty
Yeah, maybe
tame.
It was my website, but I don't think
that might have been it.
It might have been.
Cuz I've read the stories on your website. They were I don't think we talked about that in the show.
I don't remember what I wrote. I just never do. Sometimes I do go back and tweak them a little bit.
It was a story like, about guys sitting on the couch in his living room and him kind of crawling around on all fours.
Oh, Cole Porter.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
That thing.
I can
I
see why
that
would offend.
Yeah, yeah. That was, yeah. That's a good story, actually. But I did ask Cloris Leachman about Jack Cassidy because I heard that he wouldn't. he wouldn't take the part of Ted Baxter in the Mary Tyler Moore Show because he didn't want to be in a female-led show. That's what I heard.
Oh, interesting.
And I asked Cloris Leachman about that, and she was actually mortified. She goes, Jack was nothing but, you know, but he was dead for 30 years. And people.
She's going to say something nice about
him.
Yeah,
of course she is.
Yeah.
But maybe it's true, too. I don't know. But I know that he, J.B. Cassidy, had a really tormented relationship because Jack wanted to be the guy. Yeah. And all of a sudden, he's been doing stage for 30 years. All of a sudden, David Cassidy comes out and he's like,
he's in Tiger Beat and he's the star of the world. Yeah.
And one of the highest paid entertainers at the time, selling out stadiums. Yeah. And Jack Cassidy's like, hang on. Because there's some video footage of Jack Cassidy saying, you know, what do you think about the selling out business that you're doing to David? You know, and it's like, wow, that was kind of shitty.
That's not cool.
No.
But jealous, obviously.
He was totes jelly.
Totes jelly. My dad had a paranormal encounter involving my grandmother about, 17 years ago, probably. 16, 17 years ago. At the end of my grandmother's life, she lived with my dad. They had a house together, and she had, like, literally a granny flat. Her own kind of apartment upstairs. A big room with her own bathroom and everything. And he was at the other end of the upstairs area. There was kind of this big landing area. And then there was this big staircase that went downstairs. And they had one of those robot chair elevator things installed so she could go up and down. And she had she passed away in her sleep one night. And the next morning, she always had a routine in the morning. She'd get up at like 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And she would go downstairs and she'd make coffee. And then she'd take her coffee back up to her room, and she'd spend the morning in her room with her coffee and bagel or whatever and watch TV or whatever. And so the next morning, my dad gets up around that hour, and he opens his bedroom window or bedroom door, and she was standing right there.
Oh, my God.
At the top of the stairs. Like flesh and blood, like not, you know, transparent or anything. Mm-hmm. Like literally, she's standing there. And my dad, it took my dad a second to go, wait a minute. Like she's dead, like she's gone. And he goes, literally in just a blink of an eye, she disappeared. Not like faded away or anything like that. She was there and then she wasn't.
Hmm.
And he's never ever told any kind of ghost story. He's not one to tell stories like that at all. But he was very adamant that happened.
I love stories like that. When you said she was right there, I thought, oh my God, like an inch from his face.
Yeah, literally like face. It was like face to face with him.
I would have shit myself. Oh my God.
And I think that's what like the paranormal shows and stuff would call a repeating apparition or repeater, which is that not an intelligent ghost, but she'd done that routine, that morning routine,
going down
the stairs so many times that it left what they would call like an imprint, basically. So it's like a tape recording being played over and over and over again, and that's what what he witnessed.
So he probably wouldn't have seen her anywhere else.
No, he would have just seen her doing her morning routine, going downstairs to get her coffee and come back up again. Yeah, and she wouldn't have intelligently reacted to him being there because it was just like a tape recording playing over and over again. Yeah,
that's kind of interesting. Yeah. I would like that. I would like to see somebody that I miss. I think it'd be cool.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And then I had my cousin. My cousin was Ben Euler, and if you remember
I know that name.
Yeah, so if you remember from the 80s, Ben Euler, when he was, I think, 8 or 9, he passed away from AIDS. And this was around 86, 87, somewhere in that range. And this is, you know, back when it started getting, you know, kids started showing up with it, it really changed the conversation about it because he was a hemophiliac. He got it from a blood transfusion. So when he died, his aunt, my aunt, wrote a book called Go Toward the Light, which then got made into a TV movie starring Linda Hamilton as my aunt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a personal family story, so I won't go into details, but it's something similar to what happened with my dad and my grandma happened. There was a story, and he was older. He appeared older than what he was as a little boy.
Before my mom died, I asked her about that. How would you want to be remembered? And she'd said in her mid-30s is how she, that's how she pictures
those
herself.
Those were the golden years.
Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting.
It was sort of. I mean, because when you see pictures on people's graves, you know, sometimes you think, oh, it's not the nicest picture you've chosen. But and then you say, well, you put a young one, because I remember my mom wouldn't do that because she didn't want to appear vain.
Sure.
So, but they say, I've heard psychics say that when you are wherever you are, you're at your ideal age that you want to be.
I've heard that before. Yeah. You're at, you know, your peak adult age, whatever that age was. Yeah.
Your happy time, hopefully.
Right. Any other ghost stories?
I don't think so. No.
No. That's all the encounters you've had? You had, no, you know what? You
had shitloads, but I don't.
You
I
had a really
remember.
Cool. You recorded an EVP.
Oh yeah, yeah.
At
Edith
Paramount
Head, yeah.
one time.
Edith
what was
Head.
That?
It was Edith Head.
You were in the costume, the old costume department yeah. of Paramount yeah. Pictures, the studio yeah. lot. And what happened?
Well, you know, we were doing investigations. I mean, this is yeah. before every town, every city had their own paranormal society. I mean,
this is before ghost hunters.
It's
and all
like
that
20
stuff.
Years ago.
Yeah.
And we just a group of about eight of us got together and did this. And we spent the night at the Wax Museum on Hollywood Boulevard. We spent the night at the bank building in mm-hmm. Hollywood and Highland and lots of other weird places. But we spent a night cruising around Paramount Studios. And we were in the costume department. And that's where Edith Head very famously, you know, made so many of her legendary costumes. She like 85 Oscars. I mean, she was probably the most famous costumer in film history. And so they let us go and they said, come back in 15 minutes. So I was going down a row of jackets and you know, really tight, you know, little paths that are surrounded by clothing. So there's no acoustics.
It was just racks and racks yeah. of clothes. Yeah.
And I'm right in the middle of it. And you can hear me whisper, Edith Head, are you in here? And I didn't hear anything, but I played it back. And there's a loud acknowledgement of a female voice. And I think it's a yes.
Edith Head, are you in here? Haley.
Interesting.
But it was, I put that on YouTube. It was weird. It was a very weird. You know, and I spent the night in Grandview Cemetery. We used to do this.
And what's the historical significance?
Well, Grandview was a cemetery that famously was mismanaged.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman who mismanaged it committed suicide or died mm-hmm. suddenly. And this place was empty. There was no money. And the place was empty. And we used to do volunteer Halloween night. We'd spend the night in the cemetery to make sure people weren't coming in and breaking open graves and stuff. So we had free run of the place.
And where is it? Where is it located?
In Glendale.
Okay. Glendale, California.
Yeah. Right. Or, yeah, Mountain View or Glendale. But anyway, so I would put my MP3 recorder in a mausoleum and shut the door. And I just let it go for hours.
Oh, wow.
And then I'd go back and listen to it later on. And the stuff that I caught was just crazy with the shuffling of feet and doors opening and closing and stuff. And I have this. It's hard to, if I send it to you, you'd hear it. But there's an MP3 and there's somebody that whispers into this thing very faintly, I love you.
Wow.
And I swear, I mean, I'll send it to you. You'll hear it. I mean, it was pretty creepy.
So here's that EVP from inside the mausoleum.
I know you gotta. It's like you really gotta concentrate, and then people will go. Yeah. But I'm just saying, you gotta download it and you gotta listen to it with headphones.
Crank it.
You'll
up.
Hear it.
Yeah,
you'll hear it. Absolutely.
Wow.
And then This isn't even that big of a cemetery, and it's like almost a full moon. I mean, it's a clear area. The moon is beating down. It's really bright. You could see, you know, hundreds of yards. And this family of coyotes literally walk into the middle mm-hmm. of this bright area and just start baying. And I got that on tape.
Yeah.
And that was nuts. I mean, just these coyotes just wailing.
So
back to wild animals. Okay.
Poltergeist. Look, guys, happy Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Happy Halloween.
Thank you for spending time with us.
Yeah. We hope that this was kind of spooky and thought provoking.
Happy hauntings.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget your death certificate.
Everybody.
Oh, did you see that shit that Dave Navarro painted on my shop?
He painted the haunted mansion. I didn't know what the story was. That was. I saw you posted the picture.
Yeah, yeah.
So
Dave
on
Navarro,
your shop, what happened?
Dave Navarro, who's a fan of the business
and a famous musician.
Yes.
And Red Hot Chili Peppers and all Jane's Addiction. And all
yeah,
that shit,
Nine
right?
Inch Nails and yeah, and but so he has a street name. I forget. Life After Death Street, I think, is the name is Instagram. And he blesses buildings with artwork. And he blessed the side of my building with this awesome picture of the three ghosts, the hitchhiking ghosts from the from the haunted mansion. And I just came in one day, and it was like, there it was. And it's huge.
That's awesome.
So it was really cool. And then my friend Cece said, it's on Dave's Instagram, so you could see him actually doing it. Not him, but it's his.
We went on his show one time. A long time ago, it may have been pre-podcast era. I think it may have just been an internet show. But we went and recorded.
Yeah.
He did it. And I remember you said that you used to see him on your tour.
This was Carmen Electra, and he denied it. But it was, I mean, I looked, I know who they are, you know what I mean? So, yeah, that wasn't our house. Yes, it was. That wasn't our house. But, you know, he was a nice guy, and he really supportive. He always, you know, retweets stuff for us, and but it's so cool.
It is cool. Yeah, I saw the pictures. It's awesome.
Cool. All right, thanks, you guys.
Thank you, guys. Happy Halloween. Be safe, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
This has been an episode of the Dearly Departed Podcast. Dig up more episodes at dearlydepartedpod.com and on iTunes and Google Play. See you next time.